Education and Career Readiness Policy and Finance Committee to order. It doesn't look like we have a quorum, but take my word for it, we do. Before we do our two bills today, we have the minutes before us from yesterday, March 20th. Representative Albright.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. I would move the minutes from March 20th of 2018.
All right. Any corrections, comments? Hearing none, all those in favor of the minutes from March 20th, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And the minutes have been approved. Representative Dean can make his way to the table. Before we hear from our first presenter today, I have an announcement from the University of Minnesota that I will repeat again later when more people are here, but I'd just like you to note this. Today, from 4:30 to 5:30 in room 300 North in this building, there's an event hosted by the University and the American Cancer Society, their Action Network, and I guess a couple of things. It's very important. We'll be talking about some of the research and the clinical trials and so forth. There's also some food. And we'll repeat that again before the committee ends its business. All right, the first bill today is House File 3062. Representative Pat Dean and I, as chair, would like to bring this 3062 House bill before this committee and move it to be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. And before we there's an amendment, is that correct, Representative Dean? Would you like to move that this time?
Sure.
Or I can move it, I guess.
Yep. If you'd like to move the A2 amendment, that would be great.
Okay. I move the A2 amendment to House File 3062. Any discussion? Would you like to just briefly? Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if the author of the bill would just explain the amendment before we vote on it.
That would be good.
Yep. Basically, what the bill does is it connects the federal availability of funds for opioid education to both high school as well as undergraduate post-secondary institutions so that they can utilize those funds. And when I was in the Representative Loon's committee, it was suggested, just based on the targeting of the age group, to go a little lower. This would allow seventh graders and up to avail themselves of this training. So that's what the A2 amendment does, is it just scoots down from ninth grade to seventh grade.
Okay, any questions about the amendment? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion to amend the A2 or pass the A2 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. All right, recognizing Representative Dean, can you explain the whole bill to us?
This bill was brought to us by some students of Representative Loonen. Representative Loonen students were looking for ways to bring opioid education to their high school and also trying to connect that effort to funds that we have, primarily federal funds for opioid education, also realizing that we can address the opioid epidemic in many ways. And one of those ways is through the demand side and on the prevalence of kids primarily taking prescription medication from family members or each other and abusing that, that letting kids know about the dangers of opioids and addiction, to kind of connect the federal sources through the schools, both at the post-secondary as well as our high schools and junior high schools, is the goal of that, and using the Department of Human Services as the commissioner to establish a grant program in order to make that happen, and that would anticipate grant awards coming in the future. So that's the idea. It was brought to us by students. The idea is to connect schools to education places where they learn to the grants which are coming federally through DHS. That's what this bill does, and it provides a mechanism to do that.
All right. Thank you. Discussion? Questions? I think you explained it quite well. I don't hear any questions. So unless you've got any additional comments, Representative Dean.
Well, if you'd like to renew your motion, I appreciate your support.
I do. I renew my motion that House File 3062 as amended be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. And it's on its way. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, we have to hold on. See, yesterday I thought I was the dictator, and they caught me at it. So today we will vote. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And we're done. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt.
I knew you were in a hurry, so that's...
Thank you.
It's going to be helpful. All right. We have one more bill to deal with, and... Yes, you wouldn't mind. But,
we'll bring House File 3900 before the committee. Representative Nornes, would you like to move House File 3900?
Yes, House File 3900, bring it up, and I believe the intention is to probably lay it over at some as we conclude today. So, without delaying, I would like to basically test the add the testimony of our best fire.
Okay, thank
about
you.
The Office of Fire Education.
Thank you, Representative Norris. And we have testifier from the Office of Higher Education. If you'll state your name and proceed your testimony.
I'm Nikki Oliver. Nikki Oliver with the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. Thank you, committee members, for hearing. This is the agency policy bill for higher education. I can do. So I'll go section by section. Section 1 amends Minnesota Statutes of 2016, Section 127A.70, Subdivision 2. The Minnesota Office of Higher Education is proposing this amendment to existing statutes covering SLEDs to include ECLDS, which is the Early Childhood Longitudinal Data System. The currently ECLDS is managed by the Minnesota Department of Education, and the amendment just adds language for things that ECLDS is currently doing to the SLEDS statute.
If there are questions along the way, you're...
Okay. Thank you.
But if not, we'll just continue.
So are there any member questions currently? Please proceed with your testimony.
Section 2 and 3 amends 136A.1275, which is the Minnesota Teacher Candidate Grant. It clarifies that underrepresented groups based in Minnesota's are based in Minnesota's teacher workforce. It also clarifies how intent to teach in shortage areas can be documented. And it also eliminates a repayment requirement, as that is not a part of the eligibility for the actual grant itself. Okay. Section 4 amends 136A.15, Subdivision 1, which is the self-loan program. It adds the definition of eligible student, which is being repealed from 136A.1701, Subdivision 12. So essentially it's taking that definition and putting it into one statute instead of having it in two separate places. Section 5 and Section 7 through 10 also amends the self-loan, which by adding the self-loan refinancing program statute. So that's what it does in those several sections there. Section 6 amends 136A16, Subdivision 2, and it removes language that refers to a federal loan program that no longer exists. Section 11 amends 136A.1701, Subdivision 7, which is also the self-loan program. It deletes language and adds broad language to allow flexibility in the repayment options for borrowers. Currently, we have several stages of the self-loan, so every time there's new rules or changes to the repayment options or the program itself, that is essentially a new self-loan. So we have, I believe, five people in the first and second phases are coming up to the end of their payment terms. After the program was established, there was also the ability for people experiencing short-term disabilities to get a deferment. The issue was if they had a 10-year repayment term and they got a 3-year deferment and they got back on their repayment term, they only had 7 years left to pay. So those borrowers are coming up to large balloon payments, and by making these changes, it'll allow the program flexibility to give those borrowers more time to pay out their loans. Section 12 and Section 15 through 16 amends 136A.64, Subdivision 1, 136A.822, Subdivision 10, and 136A.8295, and these are the private institution, career, and degree-granting institution statutes. What it is just adding the complaint process to their student disclosures. Section 13 amends 136A.646. And what that is doing is adding an additional surety bond option for new schools. Last session, there was a change to allow for schools to have a different, smaller and new schools to have a different bond calculation. The actual calculation was left out. I don't know if that was an oversight or just a miss. So that change also puts in how those surety bonds would be calculated for those new schools. There is a suggestion to add one to the subdivision to make it clear. In the bill, it says subdivision 7, and this is going to make it clear. Section 14 amends 136A.822, Subdivision 6. What this is doing is changing the word income to revenue. So it's just using terms that the institutions are familiar with when doing their accounting. So that's what that's doing. And then Section 17 amends last year's appropriation law. So it's amending Minnesota Law 2017, Chapter 89, Article 1, Section 2, Subdivision 29, which is the Emergency Assistance for Post-Secondary Students program. Currently, it does not say that they have to be Minnesota institutions, and our understanding is the intent is for the grants only to be for Minnesota institutions, so there's a change to clarify that. And then there's another change to remove the language that says the funds cannot be applied to the student's financial aid. The reason we suggest removing this language is because it conflicts with federal policies that the institutions must comply with. I would like to note that I'm also the manager of our grants in our agency, and the grants administrator in the development of the RFP for this program, which is new, has strongly encouraged institutions to do what they can to do the least harm to the students, because we're all on the same page. We want to make sure the student is completing and there's no financial aid barriers or financial barriers. So. And then there are a couple of repealers, which are referred to things that I mentioned earlier. We're repealing the eligible student language and putting it somewhere, putting it in a different part of the statute. And we're also repealing language that refers to a federal law that doesn't, a program that doesn't exist anymore.
We do have a member question. Thank you for your testimony. Representative Heinzman.
Just to be clear on the eligible student change, did we previously allow those dollars to go towards students outside of the state?
Ms. Oliver.
Madam Chair, Representative, could you clarify, do you mean for the self-loan program or?
Nodding yes.
Thank you, Ms. Oliver. The self-loan program, we do issue loans to students going to institutions out of state. And the language hasn't changed. We're just moving it from one area, one statute to another. It's the exact same language that is currently in existence.
Follow-up, Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, to be clear, students outside of the state of Minnesota would be eligible for these benefits.
Ms. Oliver.
Madam.
If they
have to be a Minnesota resident attending, but they can attend an institution outside of Minnesota and qualify for self-loan, if that makes any sense. Are you referring to the self-loan change?
Representative Heinzman.
Yeah, so Section 4 in the bill, there's quite a significant change in the language. And so Section 4.12, non-Minnesota residents, students not physically attending classes in Minnesota due to enrollment in a study abroad program for 12 months or less, are eligible students, non-Minnesota residents enrolled in study abroad programs exceeding 12 months, are not eligible. So just trying to understand the difference between those and what it might have been in years past.
Ms. Oliver.
Madam Chair, Representative, since you're laying this over, I can verify your question. Sure. With our self-loan manager. From what I gather, this is just taking that language that was repealed and reinserting it there. So,
Thank you, Ms. Oliver. Other member questions? Seeing none, is there anyone from the audience who wishes to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we'll renew the motion, renew the motion to lay 3900 over for possible inclusion or further action at a later time. I think with that, is there any closing comments, Representative Nornes?
I have nothing to add other than it's quite complicated. I hope you're paying attention.
Thank you, Representative Nornes. Your bill is laid over for possible inclusion at a later time.
I have one before you hit that. I just want to repeat the announcement I had earlier at the beginning of the hearing today regarding to an event over at room 300 North that's going on right now. Well, no, it isn't coming. That starts at 4:30, so you've got time. 4:30 to 5:30, it's hosted by the University of Minnesota and the American Cancer Society Action Network. It's from 4:30 to 5:30. It's a conversation with Minnesota researchers, patients, and legislators about research dealing with cancer research. So it's pretty, you'll find it very interesting. Again, it's 4:30 to 5:30, and they have some beverages and a few snacks to go with it. So I encourage you to go if possible. By the way, the clock is at 5 o'clock for the Republicans, but we can do both. So that's.
I think so, Representative Nornes. Thank you for the announcement. Any further comments or committee business before we adjourn? Seeing none, we will adjourn. And, Representative Daniels, forgive me. I believe we laid it over.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's all right. Thank you, Representative Daniels. I asked the same question, so great clarifying question. The bill's laid over, and we are adjourned.